What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Rabbi Mark Gittler, 929 North America, the online and app-based daily Bible chapter program. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and our Shinshiniot Young Representatives of Israel, Rotem Rappaport and Ron Benekot. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. We are now about 3 weeks from the beginning of Pesach, Passover, a remarkable season when we explore the concept of freedom in Judaism, its extraordinary importance, and its meaning to us personally. For Jews, freedom is intimately tied up with the Exodus story, with the need to leave a place of constriction and servitude, of slavery and abuse, in order to achieve freedom and covenant. In the Passover Seder, the first two nights of Pesach are coming up April 19th and 20th, the main thematic statement is, in every generation, each of us must see ourselves as though we personally had come out of Egypt. Perhaps because our birth as a people took place through this process of leaving Egypt, there's something powerful and intrinsic in the Jewish response to immigration. We Jews have a kind of internalized understanding of how the original Exodus and all of our subsequent enforced wandering entered our souls. Israeli poet Amnon Rybak said it beautifully in his poem Kol Adam Tzarich Mitzrayim, "Everyone needs an Egypt." Everyone needs his own personal Egypt, to be Moses himself in the midst of it with a strong hand or gritted teeth. Everyone needs terror and great darkness, and comfort and security and salvation, to know how to lift his eyes to heaven. Everyone needs one prayer that will always be on his lips. A man needs to surrender once. Everyone needs a shoulder. Everyone needs his own personal Egypt to redeem himself from the house of bondage, to leave at midnight into the wilderness of fears, to stride straight into the midst of the waters, to see them open before him on both sides. Everyone needs a shoulder to lift up the bones of Joseph. Everyone needs to straighten up. Everyone needs his own personal Egypt and Jerusalem, and one long journey to remember forever in his feet. That was Amnon Rybak's great poem, Everyone Needs an Egypt. You see, immigration is in our blood, in our hearts, and yes, often in our feet. That has made these past few years of anti-immigrant rhetoric here in America very strange for many Jews. We've always been the beneficiary of the U.S.'s understanding of itself as a nation of immigrants and the children and grandchildren of immigrants. America, from its very beginnings, has been the gathering place of the tired, the poor, the tempest-tossed, the wretched refuse of the teeming shores of other nations, the discards. As Emma Lazarus put it in her poem on the base of the Statue of Liberty, our love of this country is in no small measure based on America's seemingly infinite capacity to accept the rejected peoples of the world and make of them a new, better, stronger, finer, more creative, innovative, entrepreneurial, and caring nation.
Well, we come on the ship they called the Mayflower. We come on the ship that sailed the moon. Come in the ages most uncertain hours and sing an American tune.
Oh. It has been the very immigrants from the poor countries of the world who have built this country and kept it strong and successful. And no one should understand that better than Jews, who have found in America not only a refuge, but a true home. To play us in this morning as part of our pre-Passover preview of music for Pesach, here is Safam's setting of Psalm 114, Betzeit Yisrael Mimitzrayim, when Israel came out of Egypt. That was the group Safam's setting of the Passover Psalm 114, when Israel came out of Egypt. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Mark Gittler of 929 North America, the online and app-based daily Bible chapter program. It's an ambitious, high-tech effort to introduce the entire Hebrew Bible to Jews and to anyone interested in the Tanakh. Find out where and why it started and how it all works when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome to Jewish our guest this morning, Rabbi Mark Gittler, is crucial to the 929 program, which he will explain to all of us. Mark, tell us a little bit about the origin of this and the purpose of it.
So 929 is so named because there are 929 chapters in the Tanakh, in the Jewish Bible, beginning with the creation story in Genesis all the way through the Second Chronicles, encompassing books that you may be familiar with, like Jonah, and obviously the stories of the patriarchs, the matriarchs, Moses, the Exodus of Egypt, Mordecai and Esther, stories of David and Solomon, etc., etc. These are the foundational texts of Jewish life. And a number of years ago, there was an idea in Israel that there are Jews and they're in Israel, and we are in Israel and not Uganda, as well known, because of the Tanakh, because of the Jewish Bible.
Thank God, I might add. Just had to throw that in there.
Well said. And we speak Hebrew and not Aramaic or Russian or German. This is in Israel, of course, where some of those other languages are certainly spoken, because of the Tanakh. It's not because of the Babylonian Talmud or any other book. But unfortunately, much of the Jewish community, or just Israelis in general, are not familiar with these foundational texts. So there was an idea to do sort of a digital Daf Yomi. Daf Yomi, the daily study of a page of Talmud, but to do it digitally for the Tanakh, and to make it a Israel-wide project, not a project that's in the yeshivot, but a project that includes the religious and the secular. And so that was the idea of the project. And it's headed in Israel by Rabbi Benny Lau and Gal Gabai. Benny Lau, a well-known rabbi in Israel. Somebody once described him as the rabbi of the secular Jews of Israel. Gal Gabai is a correspondent for Haaretz.
Right.
And they started, the project was started. They became the heads of the project. And for about 3.5 years, 929 chapters, 5 days a week, writers, artists, academics, rabbis, political figures, diplomats contributed in different ways each day to the daily chapter. And the project was very, very successful in Israel. They had up to 250,000 regular users. And about a year ago or so, a couple of us went to them and said, the project has been so successful in Israel, we would love to bring it to principally America, but the English-speaking world, so that people here will also have the opportunity to hear from a variety of different voices about our ancient books. And it doesn't matter what you think about these books. It doesn't matter if you believe that they are God's given word or if you think they are the wise ideas of our ancestors or that some of it is completely foolish, but they are our books and we should know them and not ignore them. And so a group of us brought it here to the States, and we are currently towards the end of the book of Deuteronomy. We're in the middle of the book of Deuteronomy, so coming close to the end of the Torah, the five books of Moses, in this first cycle that we have begun.
And obviously you have a long way to go with the whole rest, obviously the Nevi'im, the Ketuvim, the rest of the Tanakh. We'll talk about how this works and what the impact has been already of this kind of Daf Tanakh as opposed to Daf Yomi when we come back in a moment with Rabbi Mark Gittler. Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills in northwest Tucson, celebrates its first services, classes, holidays, and events this spring. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is creating a vibrant community striving every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in the foothills in northwest Tucson, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, festivals, and cultural Jewish programming. Our magnificent new Beit Simcha home, 3001 East Skyline Boulevards on the northeast corner of Skyline and Campbell across from La Encantada. Services, classes, and events are open to all. Join us Friday night at Skyline and Campbell for Shabbat services at 6:30, Saturday morning Torah studies at 9 a.m. and services at 10 a.m., although this week we'll be holding our monthly hike and service at Magnificent Seven Falls. Meet in the parking lot of Sabino Canyon at 9 a.m., Saturday, April 7th. And join us for our inaugural first night Passover Seder, Friday, April 19th at 6 o'clock, a fabulous experience of the Feast of Freedom in song, story, food, and celebration. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha, to attend services, our great religious school, Torah Tikes program, and rich array of adult education academy courses, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org. That's www.BeitSimchaTucson.org. Or call 520-276-5675, 276-5675, or BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me in the newest Jewish community in southern Arizona at its exciting beginnings. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or akvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at 2JewishRadio.com. You can stream all past and present shows through the website or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcast, Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Last week we started talking about some very large Jewish communities, at least in terms of population, that we don't really think about being large Jewish communities. You mentioned that when you're in Kiev not too long ago, in Ukraine, they said there's something like 600,000 Jews there. That would be about a tenth of the entire Jewish population of the United States, really a very large number. Now, of course, how many of them identify, affiliate, do Jewish stuff, celebrate Pesach, which is coming up. Who knows? But still a very interesting and not particularly well-tapped kind of Jewish place.
Right. I think one of the important phenomena to understand about the post-Soviet space, geographically, socially, politically, etc., is that many, many people have moved from the countryside into major cities, and particularly capitals. So lots of formerly important but smaller Jewish communities have disappeared, not so much as a result of the Holocaust, but as a result of urbanization and kind of a brain drain to the capital or really big provincial centers. Like in Ukraine, I would say Odessa and Lviv both have drawing power for people who don't necessarily want to move to Kyiv. But in general, these cities have populations that are swelling, and Jews who are true to their origins, the values of their parents and grandparents, et cetera, are interested in pursuing higher education, in upward mobility, in professional fulfillment, et cetera, et cetera. So they often move to the capital and augment the number of Jews who are already there. So that's part of what's going on. The other thing is that in the smaller places, it's hard for younger Jews to meet other younger Jews, to date, to marry, whatever. In the bigger places, there's a chance of doing that, at least more so than in a small shtetl. What I would say is most American Jews have grandparents or great-grandparents from somewhere in what we loosely refer to as Russia, the former Soviet Union. Often Ukraine, Belarus, Lithuania, whatever. Sometimes also Poland, which was not, was occupied by the former Soviet Union partially. It was also occupied by Germany.
By the Nazis, okay, of course. But, yeah. Polish Jewish community was radically diminished, of course.
Right. But it's also the same thing there, that Jews from smaller places have moved to Warsaw and or Krakow as like big cities with opportunity and whatever. So in leading tour groups, people often ask about, can I make a side trip to my grandfather's shtetl, whatever? And, you know, the travel may be difficult. It may be uncomfortable. You may be dealing largely with ghosts, the remains of one once beautiful active synagogue, and maybe there's 200 Jews left there. But I encourage people to do that and to leave the comfort of the big city and the Hilton and all that and go to reconnect with their roots. And part of the reason I do that is connected with a line from the Passover Seder that I would like to discuss with you next week.
As we continue to approach Pesach here on Two Jewish, we'll talk about it next week. Thanks, Tom.
I look forward to it.
There's a reason why SiriusXM Satellite Radio plays Rabbi Bob Alper's comedy bits every day, sandwiched between people like Bob Newhart and Jerry Seinfeld. Bob's unique background. He's an ordained rabbi who served congregations for 14 years and has a doctorate from Princeton Theological Seminary, and that prepared him well for a 30-year comedy career with wonderfully unique material presented in a way that's intelligent, sophisticated, and guaranteed 100% clean. Bob Alper is much funnier than Rabbi Sam Kohan, and I can testify to that. It'll be 90 minutes of nonstop laughter with Rabbi Bob Alper Sunday, March 31st at 7 p.m. when the world's only practicing clergyman doing stand-up comedy intentionally comes to Tucson, a program open to all in the community and universally enjoyable. Join us in a charitable benefit for Congregation Beit Simcha on Erev April Fool's Day when Rabbi Bob Alper entertains in a one-night-only show, 3001 East Skyline Drive at Congregation Beit Simcha, the northeast corner of Skyline and Campbell. For tickets, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675, $20 in advance, $25 at the door. Sunday night, March 31st at 7 p.m., go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675 for a wonderful night of Jewish comedy with Rabbi Bob Alper. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Morris is in a kosher restaurant one night when he notices a man and woman sitting at a table next to his, looking very romantic, touching hands, staring lovingly into each other's eyes. Then suddenly the man looks up, slides off his chair, and falls under the table. Morris notices the woman doesn't seem to have seen this. She's looking in the other direction. He leans over to her and says, "Lady, I'm sorry to tell you this, but your husband just collapsed under your table." "That's not possible," the woman answers. "My husband just walked into the restaurant." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. We welcome our Shin Shiniot, our young representatives of Israel here for the Weintraub Israel Center, but mostly for the nation of Israel, Ron Renekot and Rotem Rappaport. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov.
Boker Tov.
So you guys are getting to do something very exciting, vote in an Israeli national election for the very first time. It's the first time you're old enough. How, it's by remote control? Like, how do you do this?
So next Wednesday, we're going to get to go to Los Angeles to the consul over there, and we're going to meet the rest of the Shin Shinim there. They're going to explain a little bit about the election, make sure we have all the information that we need, and we're going to vote on Thursday. LA is the closest place that you can vote if you're in Tucson.
Wow, so you guys will get to actually vote in person. This is a big decision. How do you make the decision? This is a close election by all polls so far.
So because we're only 18, this is our first election, and I personally didn't really was involved politically and all of that till now, because now I need to vote, and I think voting is a very important thing that you should do if you have the opportunity for. So I try to get involved more politically the last few months. It's really hard to do it like by remote control from here in Israel. But the Jewish agency, the one who brought us here, helps us a lot to make those decisions. They do, they send us all this kind of people and information. They did a webinar really, they did a webinar like a few days ago that brought a political writer
a reporter. So it was kind of from an objective perspective. Here's the different parties. Here's their goals. Here's what happens if you vote for this party, what they say they're going to do, that kind of thing.
Yes, exactly that. And he showed us the wide options that we have, like the very
tremendous number of parties
in
Israel.
Yes, there's so much. especially this election, there's a lot, like a lot more than what it used to be. And it's a really hard decision because there's all these choices and you need to choose one.
So how do you guys make that decision? You know, obviously you had your parents' opinions growing up. You've now met lots of people. You've now lived in America for 10 months, 10 months. How do you make the decision about who you're going to vote for?
I think that because we're 18, for me, especially, I feel like I need to hear different opinions from people just to help me get my opinion. And I think that when you talk to people, when you read different articles or when you listen to the news, even when you look at what the Jewish agency sent us, your opinion kind of starts to build up. And obviously, it affects by a lot of different things about from those things, from your parents' opinions, from your friends. And we don't really know much, but
it's so funny that you say that, because when I was 17, I knew everything. And every year since then, I know less and less. So I really appreciate that refreshing approach.
Yeah, so it is something that you really need to think about, because your opinion does matter.
Well, your votes do matter. It should be really interesting. I'm not going to ask you to tell our audience who you're going to vote for. That would be...
I still don't know, so...
Yeah. You won't know until you stand there and make the decision.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Mazel Tov. It's kind of a Shehecheyanu moment. This is your very first vote, and may it all lead to good things for Israel.
Thank you.
We'll talk next week. And now a word of Torah. This week we read one of the least appetizing portions of the whole year, Tazria, in the book of Leviticus. It contains instructions on the treatment of a truly horrible ancient illness, leprosy, which still exists in the world, although it isn't much in evidence in America these days, thank God. Tazria delineates the ways we are to treat those individuals afflicted with a terrible, frightening disease that our ancestors regarded as highly contagious. The method specified, basically sanitary conditions and quarantine, are still used today, are often considered state-of-the-art medical means of controlling infection of unknown origin. Nor is there any moral valence placed on those who are ill. People infected with the dread skin affliction are not considered to have brought it on themselves by bad action or error. Rather, they are simply unfortunate. They are isolated for their own protection and that of the general society. In the ancient world, this was cutting-edge treatment for the infirm, far ahead of what most cultures would do even millennia later. But even in our world, we should be aware that we rarely treat those who are gravely ill with frightening illnesses well. You may remember when the AIDS epidemic began, there was general panic about how to treat those infected. And with no justification, many individuals were ostracized from schools, neighborhoods, and society in general. Similarly, the fear of pandemics today leads to overcorrections and prejudice and bias against entire countries who are suffering from curable diseases. While we are much more knowledgeable today about infectious disease, better at sanitation and medical treatment, we are probably no more advanced psychologically than our Israelite forebears were 3,000 years ago in the Torah portion of Tazria, perhaps even less advanced, in fact. They turned to God for help, but generally treated those who were ill with compassion and care. We could learn that from them today. When we return on to Jewish, our guest, Rabbi Mark Gittler, will explain what the Hebrew Bible has to teach online and by app, chapter by chapter. Find out when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The German billionaire family that owns Einstein Brothers, other bagel places, Krispy Kreme, and many beloved food chains admitted its own family's ties to the Nazis and plans to donate millions of dollars to charity as atonement. The Reinmann family are majority owners of Pret-a-Manger and Panera Bread, as well as the popular Einstein Brothers bagels, among other chains. A report commissioned by the family recently found that its conglomerate benefited enormously from a financial relationship with the Nazis and gave financial support to the SS, the Nazi paramilitary group that enforced race laws and carried out the deportations and genocide of Jews and others. The report found that Albert Reimann Sr. and Albert Reimann Jr., whose descendants also own Noah's New York Bagels and Manhattan Bagel, were avowed anti-Semites. Reimann Sr. and Reimann Jr. had a long-time connection to the Nazis, including using French and Russian prisoners of war as slaves in the company's chemical factories. In the year 2000, German companies, including Deutsche Bank, Daimler-Benz, Volkswagen, and AEG, paid reparations to surviving prisoners of war whom they had enslaved. The Reimann family had long been aware of a connection to Nazism, but younger family members had clamored for a deeper investigation, resulting in an official study by a professor from the University of Munich. "It is all correct," family spokesperson Peter Harf told German newspaper The Bild. Reimann Sr. and Reimann Jr. were guilty. They belonged in jail, but neither Reimann was ever prosecuted after the war for their actions. Today's Reimann family has outspokenly identified their awful inheritance of forcing slavery and support for Nazis. "We were all ashamed and turned white as the wall," Harf said on behalf of the family. "There is nothing to gloss over. These crimes are disgusting." In a different but also shameful story of an extremely wealthy family, the National Portrait Gallery in London will not accept a donation of $1.3 million from the Sackler family, which owns Purdue Pharma, the company that makes the opioid OxyContin. The Guggenheim Museum is also cutting ties to the Sacklers and many other famous art museums and universities that feature Sackler wings, and Sackler galleries and Sackler buildings are considering doing so as well. Members of the family, important Jewish donors, are facing a series of lawsuits accusing them of profiting off the opioid crisis. A 2017 article in The New Yorker detailed a variety of misleading and aggressive marketing practices the company employed to encourage the use of OxyContin, including misleading statements about the drug's addictiveness. The decision on the donation was reached mutually between the National Portrait Gallery and the Sackler Trust. The giving philosophy of the family has always been to actively support institutions while never getting in the way of their mission, a spokesperson for the Sackler Trust said. It's become evident that recent reporting of allegations made against Sackler family members may cause this new donation to deflect the National Portrait Gallery from its important work. The statement vigorously denied the allegations. The Sackler family has donated to a wide range of causes in the U.S. and Israel, including the Sackler Faculty of Medicine, a medical school at Tel Aviv University, as well as major sections of the Louvre, the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, the Smithsonian, Columbia University, Harvard, Oxford, Cambridge, and many other beneficiary institutions. Also last week, OxyContin maker Purdue Pharma and its owners, the Sacklers, agreed to pay $270 million to the state of Oklahoma to settle a lawsuit accusing the drug maker of ruthlessly marketing and misleading the public about the danger of its highly addictive narcotic. The case against Purdue Pharma and other manufacturers was scheduled to go to trial in May. Accusations against the Stamford, Connecticut-based company included downplaying the addiction risk of opioids and overstating its benefits. Purdue Pharma previously denied any wrongdoing, saying labels for its painkiller carried warnings about the risk of abuse and misuse associated with the drugs. Oklahoma Attorney General Mike Hunter said he intends to hold accountable other defendants for their role in creating the worst public health crisis in our state and nation we've ever seen. The settlement is just a first step. As part of the agreement, Purdue Pharma will contribute $102.5 million to fund the creation of a National Center for Addiction Studies at Oklahoma State. That will not be named after the Sacklers, I predict. The company will also donate $20 million worth of medicines to support the center's treatment mission. The agreement, which resolves all the state's claims against Purdue Pharma, also includes an additional payment of $72.5 million, of which $12.5 million will be available to counties and cities in the state to abate the effects of the opioid crisis. The Sacklers, who were not named as defendants in the lawsuit, will contribute $75 million towards the university center. OxyContin is a prescription drug used to treat moderate to severe pain in adults. From 1999 to 2000, 218,000 people died in the U.S. from overdoses related to prescription opioids, according to the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention. OxyContin first came on the market in 1996. This settlement may take some pressure off Purdue Pharma, which has been considering bankruptcy protection. Purdue was founded in the 1950s by brothers Arthur Mortimer and Raymond Sackler. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Rabbi Mark Gittler, who is integral to the 929 Project, which we started to introduce at the beginning of the show, in which every chapter of the Tanakh of the Hebrew Bible will become a study topic that everybody can access, with or without Hebrew, with or without deep knowledge of Judaism. Tell us a little bit about how it works. For example, people can get, you know, we think about a Daf Yomi as something you go to and study Talmud if you come from an Orthodox background or even a non-Orthodox background. But this is a much more accessible and much more electronically oriented online approach, apps, stuff like that. Tell us a little bit about how it all works.
So the place where the site is found just simply is 929.org.il. And the reason the IL is that we work together with the team from Israel. Now, I must say, I am not sure 100% if somebody goes and logs on their first time, and against the numbers 929.org.il, if you will be taken to the Hebrew site or the English site, but somewhere on there you will see EN, maybe it should be ENG, and that will obviously shift you to the English site. It should automatically take you to the English site if you log on here in the States or in, I suppose, Britain or somewhere for your far-flung listeners. But that's the way to get on the site, to simply get there. When you get on the site, it will bring you to the chapter of the day. So if I were to log on now, then I would find that. There's also an app if you search for 929, and you'd probably have to search 929 Torah or something of that sort, and the app will also bring you to this chapter of the day. But let's say, right now I said we're in Deuteronomy. Let's say you want to study the Torah portion of the week, then you can easily go onto the site, and you can, if you play around a little, you can easily find yourself all the back articles in Exodus, in Leviticus, in Bereshit, in Shemot, and in Genesis and Exodus, and they're all there, and there are at this point thousands of articles. Part of making it accessible is twofold. One is that the articles are short, 300, 400 maximum, and that's the beyond the limit maximum, 500 words. So the articles are short. In fact, what I say to everybody who we recruit to write is, don't try to write about the whole chapter. Write about an image, write about a phrase, write about a character, write about a meeting, because we're not trying to have big articles. We're trying to have small articles where people can study a little bit. In addition to the articles, there's also a short podcast, and then a really short video for a couple of minutes every day. And part of what makes the project really exciting is we really, as I said earlier, it's really about being a big tent. So we have Orthodox rabbis, and we have journalists, and we have lay people, and we have conservative rabbis and rabbinical students from all sorts of different denominations, and we have artists who write. And so we really try to get a variety of different pieces. In fact, the only thing that I tell everybody is the only thing that's not allowed, obviously, be respectful. You can't get on if you're Reform and insult the Orthodox Jewish way of life, or if you're Orthodox and insult the Reform way of Jewish life, or whatever. The only thing that is verboten completely is politics. I say to people, you want to write about body shaming, immigration, you want to write about fiscal policy from something in the, daily chapter that's relevant, great, but there is no Donald and no Ivanka. And there's no Nancy Pelosi.
I think we all could use a break from that kind of conversation, don't you?
And that's what it's supposed to be. We obviously have different viewpoints and have different methodologies of our Jewish lives and how we look at the books and how we study the books. But ultimately, this is supposed to be a site that people can come to on their own and that people then can read about the text from their own perspective, some of it, and even better, from different people's perspectives, to get a larger view on what these texts might mean to somebody else. And they might be surprised that, you could be a very secular thinking person, and the articles that you may identify with the most may be coming from, a much more traditional background. We're not telling you to change your life in any way, but it's just about the grandness of the palace of Torah, if we want to put it as such. Something else, one other thing.
Sure.
Yeah, let me mention one other thing, Rabbi, which is that, and I don't have the full knowledge as to all of them, but different learning groups have popped up in different places in the country. And so I know for certain that there's a big one in New Rochelle, New York, and there's one in Atlanta, and there's one up in in Toronto, and I'm sure there are many more. Some of them I know about, some of them I can't think of the top of my head. I don't have the list in front of me. But people who are organizing chavurot, maybe get together on Shabbat after morning prayers, maybe as they're learning in morning prayers, where people have gotten together, and once a week they will either study one issue, one chapter from these five chapters. And so in addition to the solitary but enriching experience online that somebody happens, there are many people who have formed study groups to take it out from being by yourself to being, you know, a study group with a bunch of different people. If anybody's interested in doing so and needs help organizing, then I don't know, they email the show, they can email me, whatever. We'd be happy to try to help you with that, because obviously we don't want this to be just a solitary experience. We want people, if they're so inclined, to try to take it off of online and get together with friends and have, you know, real meaningful conversations about what these texts meant then or what these texts mean to us today.
So one of the fascinating parts about the website and the app, you can actually see people having discussions or, you know, the kind of live video conversations about the Parsha. In other words, it's sort of like getting a drash, but from the teacher directly in person, and they're all different. How do you select the people to do this? How does it work?
I have to tell you, it's not the easiest thing to always find. There are a couple of people, you know, thank God, like Rabbi Brad Artson, well-known rabbi, Ziegler School, and he has written so
conservative
much
rabbi
that
in
he
Los
has
Angeles.
Adapted conservative rabbi and a very successful and a wonderful, interesting thinker. So he's written so much on the Torah. And then he sends us stuff, which he shortens, you know. But one of the things that I did early on, and the project, I guess I should say, is officially called 929 English, is I went to rabbinical schools and went to organizations like Pardes and some of my colleagues, such as Shira Hechkoler or Rabbi Adam Vince, who's officially the head of the project, the 929 English, went to different organizations to find different people to write, to find different people to contribute. I will not lie, we are always looking for more contributors. We are always looking for more people. And truth be told, it's only going to get harder once we get past the five books of the Torah.
Of course, yeah.
And it will get harder and harder and harder. But I think as, you know, our audience grows and we recommend people, if they're interested in writing, to email to us to find out more information, and we'll tell them about it and give it a shot. You know, try it out, and if it works, it works. We're not looking for anybody's magnum opus. This is not a PhD thesis. It's 300 or 400 words. Yeah, so it's really, that's a big part of the challenge. That's a big part of the daily work, is my, and not just me, but connecting with all sorts of different people to find people to write, to, if they're an artist, if they want to put out something original or they have something that they want to put on the website, et cetera, et cetera. And it's challenging, but it's also extremely exciting. I speak with all sorts of interesting people all the time to try to recruit writers and contributors.
Well, I think radio show hosts should be included in that process.
We would, of course, love you to goes without, even without this interview, goes without saying that we would love to have.
This is not a bribe, I promise. It was independent of even that thought.
Right. So, you know, one of the fascinating parts, you're doing, so far it's in effect a Torah commentary, although a kind of large community Torah commentary, if you think about it, using really the whole English-speaking Jewish world. Once you get to the rest of the Bible, I'll be really fascinated to follow. You know, once you launch into the book of Joshua, for example, which is not read very much by Jews. I don't think, I personally do not know a single rabbi who's ever done a single sermon about the book of Joshua. It should be extremely interesting to see which direction this goes, because while a lot of us, even, first of all, the engagement with the Torah is great, but seeing that engagement with the rest of the Bible should be just fascinating. I think, although that'll be more challenging, it should be a great launch pad for you.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. And I think ultimately, our project will be more valuable over time for the Nevi'im and Ketuvim. Joshua is going to be challenging. It's not, let's just say it's not a book always of 21st century sensibilities.
Not quite,
Hungary,
no.
The land of Israel and dispossessing and killing all of the people therein. But I think ultimately that's what's going to be most rewarding. You can go online to all sorts of wonderful Jewish sites from all sorts of different people, and you can find all sorts of great material. But finding accessible material in terms of the prophets and the writings, and finding really a panoply, a smorgasbord, we're two Jews talking, of
an Onig Shabbat
commentary is a little bit more challenging. And I think ultimately that's what's going to be most valuable about the project is exposing people to those texts that they may not be familiar with, whether it be, you know, the book of Joshua or Judges or the book of Samuel with its rich stories about King David, or
fantastic,
the book of Kings,
yeah,
rich stories about Solomon and Elijah. But then seeing again the people from your own community and people from different communities, and we're hard at work finding people to write on those books as well.
Really, it's kind of a celebration of Jewish diversity too. You have people not only from your own modern Orthodox background, but conservative, reform, Reconstructionist, renewal, all kinds of different perspectives, which is, I think, extremely refreshing and really speaks to the Klal Yisrael orientation of the whole project.
Well, that's the way it was founded in Israel, and that was one of the reasons that I know I myself personally was attracted to the project, was this sense of seeing really various viewpoints. I could get all of my colleagues and friends people that I grew up with who are rabbis today or just scholarly Jews, or I was in rabbinical school with, to be just them to write, and it would be a very good site with a lot of quality materials, but that is not at all the point of the project. It's really about, even for a person, you know, like myself, who went through 20 plus years of Jewish education, my parents spent a lot of money for me to read and write and learn Hebrew and whatnot, to see people of just from completely different backgrounds. And you just see, right, if you just go onto the section on the website that says writers, you'll see an amazing amount of just different people with all sorts of intriguing viewpoints. One of the great things that we've had up to this point is the international president of 929 is Rabbi Jonathan Sachs. And so we have a piece
of
the Torah from Rabbi Sachs every single day, but that's for the Torah.
Right.
What's going to happen with the prophets, like you're saying, I don't know.
Fantastic. So, well,
It's fantastic, it's challenging, and it's exciting.
Yeah, look, nothing good is easy. I think this will be hard but magnificent. I want to thank Rabbi Mark Gittler for a great visit here on 2 Jewish about the 929 Project. Where can people go? How do they get involved?
So again, if you want to get on the project, we'd love to have you, whether you want to be a user or a contributor, to go to 929.org.il. And if they want to email me with any questions, you can email me at Mark, it's a little complex, MARC.Gittler@gmail.com. That's the easiest one. Just give you the Gmail. So Mark, MARC.Gittler@gmail.com.
Mark, thank you so much. And continued Behatzlacha, great luck with this project. When we come back on 2 Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball. Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here on Too Jewish this morning with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest on Too Jewish will be Bram Presser, the Australian author of the National Jewish Book Award-winning debut novel, The Book of Dirt. And in person, don't miss comedian Rabbi Bob Alper, star of Jewish Comedy Night tonight at Congregation Beit Simcha. That's March 31st. It's Erev April Fool's Day. It'll be great fun. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TooJewishRadio.com website. Our playout this morning comes from our pre-Passover musical preview for Pesach for the festival coming up April 19th, less than 3 weeks away. Join us at Congregation Beit Simcha for a great Seder, our very first as a synagogue, the first night of Passover. To play us out this morning, it's the classic Seder song Chad Gadya in a setting created by cantor Moshe Oysher, sung by the inimitable cantor and past guest of Too Jewish, Chazan Abe Mizrahi. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Chad Gadya.
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.